2%.
The 2%'s right over here.
Oh, hey, Jenna. I didn't know you shopped here.
Yeah. Anything to support local food. Know what I mean?
I definitely do. Though that's not the only thing you do in the name of Good Eats, obviously.
Well, true. I also host Eating Matters every Wednesday at 5 p.m., where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. Be sure to tune in.
All right, gotta get the plug in there. I get it.
Yep, I'm hashtag shameless.
You know what else you can do to support the local food community, right?
Well, yeah. Make a donation to Heritage Radio Network, the world's pioneer food radio station.
That's right. And I gotta call you out on the whole local thing.
What do you mean?
Well, The Farm Report, A Taste of the Past, Japan Eats. Those are shows that take you around the country and the world.
I'll give you that. So how can listeners give their support?
It's pretty easy. Just go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the big red heart in the top right corner. It's pretty easy from there.
Thanks.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and I host In the Drink every Wednesday morning at our not-so-new time anymore, 11 a.m., coming to you live from Roberta's here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And when I'm not at, I'm not hosting the show, you can always find me, really this summer at Altalinea, which is our big outdoor, extravaganza of all things Italian aperitivo, cocktails, including the Negroni and our famous, frozen Negroni. And we'll get to more of that in a little bit. Thank you so much for listening, and you can always subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Please go ahead and do that if you like it, or listen to past episodes on heritageradionetwork.org/inthedrink. We have a great show ahead of you today. I'm really excited. We have someone who I'm going to be meeting the first time. This is actually a call-in show. This is a rare call-in show for us, and especially for someone I'm meeting the first time, a legend of the cocktail community, someone who's written many, many books, including his most recent one called The Negroni, which came out last year, and he's kind enough to speak with us about it today. Also, the entrepreneur behind Regan's Orange Bitters, which are indispensable at any bar, and the author of several free weekly email newsletters. We have Gaz Regan, if you haven't figured it out already. Gaz, welcome to In the Drink. It is really exciting to have you here.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you for having me. Much appreciated, man.
And I appreciate you you doing this. And thanks. I'm sure that when the book came out, the Negroni book came out, I'm sure you did a lot of interviews and stuff. And I don't know if it's been a while since you've spoken about it. It's been a year since it's been out. But being as though this is Negroni week, I thought it was an appropriate time to speak with you about this book and your love of this cocktail.
Absolutely, because Negroni's work, no matter how many years have passed since you wrote the book, you know?
And you mentioned at the very start of the book how you were maybe an early adopter in the bartending community for love of Negronis. Now it seems that most bartenders have a true appreciation of this drink. But what you were writing over a decade ago, maybe 15 years ago or so, about seemed very fresh and like something someone could write about today about this love of Negroni. Can you remember where your interest in Negronis really began?
Well, I can't pin the exact year, but I think it was probably in the 1990s. My first book, The Bartender's Bible, came out in 1991, and I have a feeling that's when I discovered the Negroni. And what really intrigued me, aside from discovering what a fabulous drink it is. It intrigued me that there was this legend behind it about a certain Count Negroni who was supposed to be an Italian count who invented the drink in the early 20th century. And when I read about that, I love colourful histories, and not many cocktails can be pinned down to a specific creator, but when I read about that, I became intrigued, and I tried to research a bit further to find out about Count Negroni. And if you think this was the 90s, we did not have good search engines in those days, and I couldn't find anything about Count Negroni, which made it a bit more intriguing. But at that time, I came to the conclusion that the good folk at Campari had invented Count Negroni, which is not unheard of in the marketing world. But I'm happy to say I was proved wrong. We can go into that in a little while if you wish. Does that answer your question?
It does. And this story of the Count Negroni, I think, is just a fascinating one. How does, and you go into it in your book, how does a noble Italian end up in the Midwest riding horses and gambling and even gaining a Midwestern accent? You quote an article that he was quoted in saying something like, "You're darn tootin' I do, hombre." Like, how does that happen?
Yeah, I know, it's intriguing. And of course, I don't really know how it happened, but it's obvious that the Count and details of his life are very well documented, it turns out. And I didn't realize he was a true figure until David Wondrich, the author of Imbibe, uncovered this book in Italian that was all about the Count and the drink. And so all that we know, or all that I know, I should say, is that he was a legitimate Count, and he must have just been an adventurous spirit, because in the late, toward the end of the 19th century, he did indeed go to, or come to the USA, and he was, as you said, he was a cowboy, he was a bronco buster, he rode the trail, and he also was a big gambling man, he was a big showman, and he was a larger-than-life character, let me say. And actually, as I'm just thinking this as I'm going along, you know, David Wondrich's book, Imbibe, which I think is the finest historical drinks book ever written, and I mean that with absolutely no reservations whatsoever. David's writing is incredible. But in his book, one of the points he makes is that in America, in the late 1900s, late 1800s, there were only two types of men in America, and they were sportsmen, and the others were not sportsmen. Now, when we think about sportsmen today, we think about people who play football or play baseball. But in 19th century terms, a sportsman was a man about town. He was a gambler. He was a drinker. He was a player, you know? And so half the country was sportsmen, and those who weren't were your regular people who had 2.4 children, went to church once a week, and held a 9-to-5 job. So I have no doubt at all that Count Negroni was a very stereotypical American sportsman, even though he was born in Italy.
Yeah, he definitely embodies that Jerry Thomas era of flamboyancy as well, kind of this over-the-top persona.
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely right. And, you know, that article that you quoted from, actually, Wondrich gave me that article. He's an incredible researcher. But I wouldn't have that without him. That article is one of the few instances where we actually hear a conversation with Count Negroni. It was written, I think, in 1924. So that would be about 5 years after the Negroni cocktail was invented. And he was dressed, the guy who wrote the article was a newspaper man from the Midwest in the USA, and he was just touring Italy when he came across this man on horseback who was wearing all Western regalia. He had like a, I'm making this up, but it's near as damn true. He had like a 10-gallon hat, and he was wearing chaps and sporting, you know, really cowboy regalia, which is what made the reporter stop his car and get out and look at this man. And we're coming to the point where you went in from, and he looked at the count and said, "Do you speak English?" And as you said, the count's reply was, "You're darn tootin' I do," which just makes me smile every time I think about it.
Me too, as an Italian in the Midwest. And then he makes his way back to Italy. I've heard stories, and I don't know if you covered it, I can't remember if it was in the book, that he stopped for some time potentially in London, which is where he potentially got this interest or love of gin, and then made his way back to Florence and his local bar, Cassoni, where he ordered the then popular Milano Torino or Americano, but just wanted it a little bit stronger with the gin. Does that kind of sum it up how you know it?
Yeah, kind of. I'm a bit vague on the London part, but I have heard that. And it was actually the Americano.
So
an Americano is Campari, sweet vermouth, and club soda. And it was then everybody was drinking them at Cafe Cassoni when the count returned from the USA. And so the count said, "Give me an Americano, but forget the club soda and put some gin in there instead." So again, his over-the-top personality, you know, his man about town and his tough guy persona, all rolled into one there. And he gives us a nice little cartoon picture of the man who we will never know properly, but it's interesting to just form little images in your mind of this this wonderful character who invented an incredible drink.
Yeah, I can imagine him being someone who was entertaining the other patrons at the bar. You know, someone who was really magnetic as well. I just picture him doing that quite a bit. In the book, you also mention that there was another Count Negroni, someone who lived a little bit earlier, and that his family had laid claim to the Negroni being actually invented by him in Corsica. And you dispel that you know, you say that probably was not the case for all these other reasons. But if anyone has any evidence that it is, you'd love to hear it. Has anyone come to you since publishing the book saying, "You know what, we have evidence that this other Count Negroni was the one who actually invented it"?
Yeah, and of course, and I say of course because it's of course in my mind, of course I have not heard from anybody, because in my opinion, the claim that General Pascal Olivier Count Negroni invented the drink is completely fabricated. And there's one of his descendants, a man called Noel Negroni, it has been him who has been posting on various sites online about his forebear who invented the drink. But when pinned down, asked for evidence, he has absolutely nothing. But I think, you know, between you and me and the 78 million people listening, I really think that Noel Negroni was just winding us all up. I don't think that he even believes that his ancestor invented it. I just think he was having a good time. And he comes off, in all honesty, as quite a bit of a snob.
Well, with such a delicious drink, I could understand the impetus of wanting to be more closely associated with it. On that note, we are going to take just a quick break. Before we go, I did want to mention that part of the reason that we're having Gaz on the show to talk about is absolutely beautiful book, The Negroni, is that it is actually Negroni Week here in New York. Tons of restaurants and bars are participating in Negroni Week. Each one of those places chooses a charity to donate $1 for each Negroni sold. And over at Alta Linea, we have chosen Friends of Finn, which supports dog shelters across the region. So for every frozen Negroni, we do frozen Negronis there, which is our most popular drink, we're going to be donating $1. And last night we had Mr. Yo-Yo Ma in a nice surprise drinking a frozen Negroni and helping to support that. He is one of the nicest, most charming guys I have met in a while.
Is he?
Incredible. Really made an impression. All right, so we're going to take just a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with more of Gaz Regan and his beautiful book, The Negroni.
And this one's called Love It by Soy. We'll be right back.
When you talk about Campari, one of the first things that comes to mind is the inimitable and ubiquitous Negroni cocktail, a favorite of Heritage Radio Network's. Joe Campanelli, host of In the Drink on Heritage Radio, talks about the interesting history of the Negroni cocktail.
The classic Milano Torino, which is better known as the Americano cocktail, which is Campari, good red vermouth. Use good red vermouth like Carpano Antica formula, Contrado, Cocchi Vermouth di Torino, one of those, and soda water. Then later on in its history was transformed into the Negroni, which substituted good gin for the soda water, something a little bit stronger. Count Negroni spent many years traveling the Midwest, the Southwest of the United States, found a penchant for strong drinks, and later went to London where he started to like his gin, brought that all back to his favorite bar in Florence and said, I'll take one of those Americano cocktails, but make it stronger, make mine with gin. And such was birthed the Negroni cocktail. And now it's really popular. I find that people are asking for Negronis with agave-based spirits, mezcal or tequila Negronis, especially mezcal, a little more popular. So mezcal Negronis are really delicious.
Experiment with your own Negroni recipe and enjoy it with Campari for a perfect cocktail creation. For more information, visit Campari.com.
Please enjoy responsibly.
All right, we are back with Gaz Regan talking about his book, The Negroni and Negroni Cocktails, here during Negroni Week. Guys, one of the things I really appreciate about your approach in this book is you say that the Campari is indispensable. It has to be there. But you leave a lot of leeway for the other two ingredients of the classic Negroni, the gin and the vermouth. Both the brands, though you do state your preference, but also the ratios. And I really like your point. It's one that I had not heard before, that if you were to ask a chef to make a Bernaise sauce, he's not going to find the original recipe and make it exactly the same, but he's going to do it in whatever way seems to make the most sense, is the most delicious to him. I think that is a truly refreshing approach. Refreshing, I like that. to cocktails. Is that a way that you have always felt, especially when these classic cocktails were coming about and people were trying so hard to make it the original way?
Yeah, it's absolutely the way I've always felt. Recipes, as far as I'm concerned, are nothing more and nothing less than guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
They give us an idea of what ratios to use. But for instance, and this is, are you familiar with a vermouth called La Quintinier?
Oh, I love vermouth, and we have so many of them at our restaurants, but I don't know this one, no.
Okay, La Quintinier is a French vermouth with a base of Pinot de Charente. It's a wonderful vermouth, mm-hmm. and it's nice, and if I may say, it's feminine and fruity and full, with a delicious spiciness behind it. So if you can put that in your head for a second and then think about Carpano Antica Formula, which is a very forthright, very strong, very do-not-ignore-me kind of vermouth with strong vanilla notes. So my example is, make two Negronis, one with La Quintinier and one with Carpano Antica Formula, and see how different they are. And in order to balance those drinks, you have to take into consideration the vermouth you're using and go up or down, depending on the vermouth, on the gin and the Campari. So we have our guideline that says it's equal portions of gin, vermouth, and Campari. And then we have the actual execution. And during the execution, we take into consideration the brand of gin, mm-hmm. and the brand of vermouth that we're using.
Interesting. And you seem to prefer a more traditional sort of junipery London style gin as well. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I do. I'm like, slap me across the face with juniper. And I cite three bottlings in the book. I'm a big Tanqueray fan.
Mm-hmm.
I like Tanqueray 10 as well, but the regular Tanqueray is my favorite. And I also love Beefeater gin, which is another slap you in the face with Beefeater, with juniper. And then there's a lesser known gin called G Vine, G apostrophe V I N E.
Sounds like a rapper.
They do two bottlings. And my favorite, especially for the Negroni, is their Nuaison bottling, which is another juniper forward gin. But that's my style, you know? Everybody has their own taste buds, and everybody should experiment with their own particular favorite.
Are there any guidelines that you would advise one who was experimenting?
It's very simple, actually. Okay, so first off, you make it with equal amounts of each ingredient and taste it that way. And then choose the gin or the vermouth, it's up to you, to go up or down on, make it again, and try it again. And keep doing that until you've figured out how it works best. You end up very, very drunk, David. but it's a good experiment for a thunderstormy afternoon, you know?
I agree. And the nice thing is it's not like you're making a pot roast, which takes 4 hours or 5 hours. To each one of these cocktails will only take a matter of minutes to put together. And it's not like you're blowing through that much time when you're experimenting.
Yeah, absolutely true. And another hint that your listeners might like has been my method for many years when creating new drinks, and you can do this with that Negroni experiment too. Before you even start to put them together, just have a small sip of each ingredient so that the flavors of that ingredient are very fresh in your mind. And once you've done that, if you immediately make the drink, I guarantee, well, I don't guarantee, but it works a lot of the time, that your brain will intuitively understand what ratios to use for those particular ingredients.
That makes a lot of sense. So this book, it seems like it was a very collaborative book, both from the research standpoint and your friend Dave contributing a lot to the beginning, but then also a lot of the recipes in the end. How were you able to choose the recipes? What were the criteria that you chose to select these recipes from bartenders around the country who are doing sort of riffs and variations of Negronis?
It's actually bartenders around the world.
Around the world,
who
yeah.
have recipes in there. So I have a decent reach on social media, and so I put out on social media that I was looking for Negroni variations, and a huge number of kind bartenders all over the world started sending me their recipes for variations on this drink. And unfortunately, I mean, there were so many, I did not, I confess, have time to test each and every one of them. And so what happens in these cases is that you paper judge them. You look at them, you think about the ingredients, and decide whether or not it's worth actually making the drink before you decide on it. Unfortunately, I'm quite sure some excellent recipes fall through the cracks that way, but it's kind of the only way you've got to do it. But then you end up with, let's say, about I ended up with about 250 Negroni variations that I actually tested. And I tested them and selected my favorites.
Yeah, so many of them sound like such interesting variations. I really love the sound of this Negroni or pear with the Taylor Frigate 20-year port.
That is very weird, because this morning, as I was preparing for this interview, I was going through the book, and that was the drink that stood out to me, too.
Yeah, something about it really stands out with the port and the 15-year balsamic and the story of this cocktail competition and the mysterious bartender who didn't win, but the drink really stayed with the judge. I love the story, and this drink, for something about it, really calls out to me. It speaks to me.
Yeah, and the fact that there is a little bit of 15-year-old balsamic vinegar in that drink just makes it stand out from the page. And of course, the guy who sent me the drink, who was a judge at the competition, was none other than Colin Field, who is the head bartender at the Hemingway Bar at the Ritz Hotel in Paris. And he's a big shot, a big name is Colin, and a real good lad. So I was very happy to be able to put something connected to him in the book.
Guys, are you somewhere outside with beautiful weather and birds chirping?
I am outside with an overcast sky and birds chirping.
I can hear it. I picture you sitting in a comfortable chair in the fields in the Hudson Valley, overlooking or drinking, sipping a Negroni.
I'm on my deck with a cup of tea, David. Joe,
that's okay. David's our very able engineer.
Yeah.
Last thing I want to ask you, you finished the book with some recipes for edible Negronis and mentioned that edible cocktails are not something just from, you know, Jello shots at frat parties, but this is something that's been going on for a while. What is your experience with edible cocktails? And I had no idea that these were even done in the 19th century.
Oh, yeah. Well, are you talking about Negroni Jello shots?
Well, not only. We have a recipe for a Negroni popsicle that sounds really interesting. The Negroni slushy, which speaks to my heart with, you know, what we're doing at our restaurant Altolinio with the frozen Negronis and Negroni ice cream. But also the idea of just edible cocktails having a long history. I think it's very cool that you've included some of these more unique recipes for, you know, sometimes people would do a recipe book and have foods that would, you know, might go with their wines or the cocktails in the book. But these are actual using alcohol, using the ingredients of the Negroni in food recipes. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, my favorite is the Negroni cheesecake. created by a world-famous bartender, Monica Berg. And she created this when she was in Oslo. She is a Norwegian woman who lives in London these days. And she went to a lot of trouble, man, to put this together. But Jesus, it's a great, great cheesecake. And, you know, just to refer back to your 19th century edible cocktails, that makes me think of, again, this is Jerry Thomas, 1862. And there is a recipe in there for a drink or a dessert called Jelly Punch. And he adds isinglass to a punch so that it sets like a jello.
Interesting. So isinglass, the fish bladder.
Yeah. And he warns, this is not verbatim, but something like this, is be very careful with this this punch because it's very intoxicating and it can render the fairer sex unable to waltz or quadrille later in the evening.
I love that. I mean, I know what a waltz is. I have no idea what a quadrille is, but that is... That
I don't
seems
know,
so...
but quadrilling was a big thing back then.
It was a big thing, and you wouldn't want that to happen. Gaz, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be on the show, and congratulations on everything, on your extraordinarily successful career, but timely with what's going on now, this beautiful book, The Negroni. The photography is beautiful. The recipes are fascinating. The writing is great. I love this book. So
thank you. May I just say, if any of your listeners buy that book this week from Kitchen Arts and Letters, which is a Manhattan bookstore, a portion of the proceeds will also be going to charity, just like buying a drink at a Negroni-supported bar.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. All right. We'll put that up on our social media, Kitchen Arts and Letters, a legendary all things culinary bookstore on the Upper East Side. And that's great that they're doing that. And I also want to just give a shout out to your website, gazregan.com. That's GAZREGAN.com. You have information on Gaz. You can sign up for his three weekly newsletters and get all the information you want. So thank you, Gaz, so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Joe. I really appreciate you thinking of me, and happy Negroni week to you, and I hope you drink as many as possible without getting into trouble.
Thank you. That's a great send-off. I appreciate that. And thanks to all of you for listening. This has been In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.